From a transmitter atop Great Blue Hill, this is WGBH, live, local talk, Boston Public Radio.
This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Emily Rooney. We're going to be talking about traffic here today, and if that snowstorm prediction comes true, it's going to be even worse than ever. No surprise, there's a study that came out. We didn't really need a study to tell us this, but Boston is the fifth most congested city in the country when it comes to traffic. And I was thinking to myself, I wonder what number one is. And Washington, D.C. popped into my head, and sure enough, that was correct. Washington, D.C. traffic is impossible. You think our traffic patterns are bad, those circles in Washington, and once you get downtown near the museums and all that, you can't get out. Anyway, we're going to be taking your phone calls here today at 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. Everything traffic. Specifically, maybe some of your suggestions for improvement. If you're somebody who does one of those long commutes on 93 or Route 9 or one of those, maybe it's something to do with the tolls. Whatever your suggestions are, we'd like to hear them. 877-301-8970. I'm here with Jason Schreiber. He's a principal at Nelson and Nygaard. And, you know, Jason, first of all, what's your average commute like? Do you have one?
Actually, I had one of my worst commutes this morning.
Really?
I was on that MBTA train.
Oh, my gosh. We got that alert. We were all in our morning meeting this morning, and we got an alert that said that expect major delays on the MBTA because there was apparently a crack in one of the rail lines or something.
And it took me, I think, 45 minutes. Normally, it's about 35 minutes on my commute. So that
was frustrating. But you were on the MBTA?
Yes.
Yeah. And coming from what?
I get
what
in
part of the world?
Yeah, I live in Somerville. I got on at Davis Station.
See, now that's a hard commute, and I think Somerville is a tough commute anyway.
It is, but I'm already close to the core, so my commute should be a lot shorter. That actually winds up being one of the shortest ways to get in.
And where are you going? Downtown usually?
I'm going to downtown.
And how'd you get out here?
I took out here on one of the car shares from downtown.
Really?
Once you get down there, it's just not worth
it. How long did that
take? Oh, that was quick. The middle of the day, 12 minutes.
Yeah. See, right now traffic is usually not that bad.
Right. Right.
So what is it about Boston? Because this study that came out of Texas A&M looked at driving patterns, and one of the issues for downtown anyway apparently is all about parking. There's some study that like one of every three cars is a car that's circling around looking for a place to park.
And that's a lot of the local congestion you get in downtowns like Boston. There's a lot of approaches out there that are trying to change that, but there's a lot of driver frustration finding their space. But I think most of the stats that you'll see from this report out of TTI have to do with folks who know where they're going to park.
Yeah.
I mean, they have a garage.
Yeah, they have a garage.
Dedicated space, and they're just dealing with congestion. Again, congestion is relative, too. I mean, the measures that came out of that report talk about certain levels of delay, but also how that's valued. So their methodology says, you know, it could be going really fast, but during the commute, it's going a lot slower. And that's true, definitely true in Boston and other major cities.
If I have to get on the Mass Pike, let's say Friday at 5:30 and start heading west, I start talking to myself. I'm saying, I don't know how people do this.
Right.
How do they do this? They get in their car. Could be 45 minutes just to Framingham, you know, just bumper to bumper.
But a lot of those folks who do that drive are enjoying themselves oftentimes. They get used to it. There's a lot of folks that you can see them.
All right. Call me if you're enjoying yourself on your commute, too.
They're on their wireless radios.
877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. If you have a suggestion for how to improve traffic patterns or if you're having a good time, you know, spending 45 minutes in your car getting to Framingham, give me a call. All right. We're going to take Daniel from Plymouth. Go ahead, Daniel.
I live in Plymouth, and it's just ridiculous that the trains are so sporadic going from Plymouth to Boston. It takes me, you know, an hour to get in if I'm very, very lucky and I don't hit the traffic. It costs $24 to get a parking spot in Boston. We used to have trains. If we could just get our trains back to the way they were in the 1920s, when trains went from Boston all the way to Woods Hole, and went all the way around the Cape, it would be amazing if we could get something like what we used to have in this country. Our trains and our public transport in this country are literally a laughing stock compared to anything that's going on in Europe. And no one has any vision, it seems, either Ray LaHood or it's just as bad in Chicago. I mean, I used to live in Rockford, which is outside of Chicago. It's a 2-hour drive. The trains don't exist. They, you know, in in Illinois. It's
but Daniel, you get to live in Plymouth. I mean, that's part of the trade-off, right?
And that's an important point too. Yeah. It is a great place to live if you have a train. As a lot of folks don't even have that, and many of the cities studied in that do not have that kind
of access. Well, and you can maybe once or three times a day, maybe you can get a train into Boston.
That's bad.
There's no parking basically in the parking lots of Plymouth at the train station. They're so desolate that people come in and hack off your catalytic converter in the middle of the night.
I'm laughing, but that's horrible.
No one's there, and it's an absolutely ridiculous situation. And
all right,
I want to pay more taxes. I want to get this public transport system better done.
Well, that's what Governor Patrick says it's going to go for. All right, Daniel, thanks for that call. You know who does have this down are the commuting towns outside of New York City. I mean, like Stamford, Greenwich, Darien. Oh, they've got it down. The trains come every 7 minutes, and you can time which one. Some of them go straight to New York. Some of them stop once or twice. And they have parking, for people.
And there's a few lines in the MBTA system that are similar to that. But where you have the greater congestion, the greater amount of people living like you have in New York, absolutely, that system responds. And that's really where congestion's at. You got a lot of people. You got a lot of activity. You have a lot of places to go and be, you're going to wind up with a bigger and better system. And Boston is pretty high on the congestion list, but it's also rather high on the public transit list. As bad as Plymouth might be, believe it or not, the trends are actually growing to improve transit. MBTA bumped up over 1.3 million riders last year. It's at its highest ridership ever in the core system. So there's more and more of that shift in lifestyles. That report actually showed that, I think it was back in 2005, we were actually at our peak. We've been driving less since 2005, not more. But relative values of time may have changed in different places and different economies around the country. And that's really what it is. I mean, if you're somebody like Daniel, who's coming in from Plymouth, who is sacrificing 45 minutes to an hour to commute, and an average of transit riders is something like that, over 40 minutes, whereas drivers are averaging 20 to 30 minutes. But he's doing that for a reason. Doesn't like to get caught in the traffic. During the peak into downtown Boston, it can take well over an hour, so it may be even shorter on the train. And he makes that decision, and if he's lucky, he gets a nice seat on a train, and he can do something else, and arguably that's...
Yeah, but three trains a day, that is terrible.
That's tough, and that's a lot of money. I think money is an important thing to think about, too, here, because we always worry about how much money we can put into transit, as the governor is investigating right now. We never talk about the amount of money we actually put into the roadway system, not just the roads, but public safety, environmental concerns, et cetera.
Talking to Jason Schreiber, he's a principal at Nielsen Nygaard, and we are talking about traffic patterns, and we're asking you to give us a call if you got some suggestions to how to improve driving patterns around the Massachusetts highways and inner city, 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. We've got Mike from Foxborough. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I had to ring in when I heard that the supposition that people enjoy.
Yeah. Jason said
commute.
That.
There's
not
a
me.
Few, right?
Go ahead. Did you enjoy it, Mike?
I tell you, I used to commute from Foxborough to Dorchester, 2 hours each way.
Ugh.
And, I now work in Providence. It's such an atrocious experience, and it's such an awful way to spend 10 hours of your week, if I'm doing the math right. But, I'm looking at getting the jobs in Boston, and, I'm going to rely on the commuter rail, and I want to know, what's being done or what steps are taken to ensure that we have that sort of a Greenwich, sort of Austining, sort of New York metropolitan area option, because I could just as easily, live in Southern Connecticut and commute to Manhattan. I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Mike. He's right. I mean, there's a reason why people drift to New York City. It's so easy to get in and out of it.
Well, it depends on where you're going in and out of it, too. There's parts of Jersey that really try to get into the core and have difficult times. You can be out on Long Island. I was just
speaking
with somebody. It can be tough.
That's different.
But, for instance, getting into Boston on the Northeast Corridor from Providence is probably one of the most successful long-distance connections into downtown. It's beautiful. And that's where the MBTA has actually extended it down to the airport and is thinking about adding service as well. That is a good place to live, for instance, to get in and out. It all has to do with where you want to be. It's going to cost a little bit more to live in downtown Providence than it might in Foxborough, but that's a decision that you might want to make.
And driving to Dorchester, I mean, you would have to, because there's no way to get there either. You'd have to go all the way into town and then take another, either a bus or whatever, to get out there, it would be ridiculous.
And this is where New York is much more advanced in its transit system, because you don't have to go all the way into a core like we have in Boston or Radial. You can actually be intercepted and move around the outside, et cetera. And that's something else folks think about, but it's money.
All right, we're taking your calls today about traffic in the state of Massachusetts. Well, Boston, really. Let's talk about it. It's Boston. We're ranked fifth most congested city in the country. Not really a big surprise, but we are behind Washington, D.C. and L.A. And who else are we behind?
New York. Depending on how you rate it, you might be high or low on that list, depending on what's important to you. But that particular list, we're fifth.
New York almost doesn't qualify because it's so. It's an island. Anyway, so Ken, go ahead from Wayland. Go ahead.
Hi. I think what really needs to be done is a systematic review of the true bottlenecks around town. Because there are a handful of bottlenecks that really screw up the traffic for everyone. And the one that bothers me on a daily basis is the Mass Turnpike. Every single morning, the traffic is bumper to bumper from the tolls in Weston to Newton Corner. And a very easy way to deal with that would be to put in a fourth lane from the entrance in West Newton to the exit at Newton Corner, because it's the traffic coming out of West Newton that blocks everyone else on the Mass Pike going back into Weston. So there are solutions that will cost some money, but if you fix some of these bottlenecks, traffic in general will flow much more smoothly.
Mm. Do you think that the tolls themselves are a problem, too, that Weston toll?
No. As a matter of fact, the people who get in fastest are the people who pay cash, because all of us people with the fast lane passes are stuck in the long line because traffic is backed up through the tolls. So it is very frustrating paying to go 2 miles an hour on the Mass Pike, and I think what a lot of people end up doing is taking Route 20 or the side roads and bringing the traffic into the communities, which is not a great idea.
Yeah, all right. Okay, thanks for that, Ken.
Sure.
I think there's a number of ways of dealing with improvements that we could be coming up with for a long time. And for decades, the state, and it actually has a very good program in place in expanding a lot of those key intersections, dealing with some of the bottlenecks surrounding the downtown core, has been trying to deal with them. It's also made a large maintenance backlog, and as you know, there's lots of that cost, and a lot of it is deferred maintenance as well. But really, when it gets down to it, and this is sort of a lesson of L.A., you can spend a lot of money trying to improve your congestion, and guess what? You're not going to build out of it, because as soon as that capacity is there, it usually gets filled relatively quickly.
They warned us that was going to happen with the Big Dig, and it did not. You can fly to the airport through the tunnels and various – it used to be, took from downtown Boston, it could take 40 minutes to get to Logan Airport. Now it's 6 minutes.
Congestion levels have actually been increasing on the Big Dig. I think the biggest thing that's happened with the Big Dig in particular is that we only improved the core. So if you look at 93
true.
North and south of the city, the backup that was in the core is now actually out there.
That's
it's like
true.
Different size pipes. But ultimately, we need to think a little bit about, okay, at some point in time, if we're not going to really be able to build out of this congestion, should we look at a different approach to it? Should we look at being able to live and work a little bit closer together instead of needing to commute so far? Or as LA has done, completely shift their approach to infrastructure. They're building transit like crazy. They're really trying to make that change because they've seen it didn't work to add the lanes and make those other tweaks. They still need to be made. There are some key things that can be done here and there, but it may not be in our best interest to build lots of that.
All right, we're taking your calls today, all things traffic, 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. We've got Mike from Needham. Go ahead.
Hi. Why don't they double charge people coming in on the Mass Turnpike and not charge them on the way out? I mean, that would save the afternoon commute.
They could either do that or they could also do peak charges, which you pay more to travel certain hours. We've never tried any of those things. It's a good point.
New York's been doing something like that for years. You pay into the island and you don't pay to get out. But New York also charges a lot more for the tunnels and tolls and getting into the downtown than we do on the Mass Pike, and that's another policy decision. Mm-hmm. What's the relative
cost? Why not charge people a premium to go through the tolls at peak hours? I mean, people would pay it. and other people would avoid it.
It's a common international practice, not done very much in the States. It's definitely something that is being considered more and more. We just as a people have to kind of embrace that. If, for instance, the administration brings that forward as part of its solutions, it makes some sense. A user charge is generally a little bit more acceptable than a tax increase as well. So therefore, it has some sense mm-hmm. of fairness. But we have a hard time saying, okay, well, we're charging the pike, but not 93 or
oh, that, euros. That's got to stop, yeah. All right, so Maureen from Hingham is on the phone. Go ahead, Maureen. Oh, I thought she came back.
No,
she's here.
Favorites.
She's here. Go ahead.
Can you hear me? Okay, yeah. So my solution is after I've heard the NPR news like at least twice in the morning, I'm a lawyer commuting to one of the courts that you can't get to using the MBTA, audiobooks. That has saved my sanity, just getting really immersed
really?
In something and just sticking with it. And then I would also say as far as New York goes, where I grew up and went to school, in grad school, there is nothing to me worse than being on the Crossfront Expressway. And having been stuck there again recently, nothing has improved.
Oh, the Crossbronx Expressway, that's a whole other deal.
It's like a parking lot. It's a parking lot. I remember studying for an exam when I was in college, sitting in that traffic.
It could be a parking lot at 2 a.m.
Yeah, I wasn't taking – it was like in the middle of the afternoon. It was 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I wasn't on the brink of causing an accident. We were just sitting there.
You know, you can do it. That's what I call a crossword puzzle traffic jam, where you're just sitting there working a crossword puzzle because there's nothing else to do.
Yeah, you just have to do it. But anyway, well, good luck with ideas.
Yeah,
great
thanks,
to talk to you.
Thanks, Maureen.
Somebody
who likes Jason was right. You know, some people, they like their commute. She listens to audio. I can't deal with the audiobooks. I don't know. It's too anxious. I don't know what it is. I can't do it.
Well, this is where I like my commute because, yeah, I can do that. Trust me, when I take the train, I see everybody listening to something and their ears there with all the wires these days. But I can also pull up my laptop if I get a seat. I can do some work on my smartphone. Those things I could never do when driving. But there are creative drivers out there. More and more of these things wind up in the audio format, hands-free cell phones. A little bit of maybe arguably dangerous on a highway, but I guess not when you're crawling real slow.
All right. We've got Eric calling. Go ahead, Eric.
Hi there. How are you today?
Good.
I grew up in Europe, and so I have a very different approach to commuting in and out of a city. Two things that I would suggest Boston really needs to develop. One is connections between the various radii that come out of Boston. I mean, if you want to use, let's say, for me, using the Green Line, I can't really get to the North Shore unless I go all the way into Boston and then all the way up. So that's one thing that's missing. The other thing is just the general concept of using mass transportation and making it more efficient. Again, to come into town from Framingham, it's difficult even on the lovely train line that we have here in town. It's just the train's full when it leaves Framingham Station. I don't know what people in Newton do. Mm-hmm. You know?
So yeah, I don't know either.
If we could push mass transit. I mean, London works wonderfully. Berlin works beautifully. I know they have older systems, but at the same time, we really should look into our mass transit.
Okay, thanks, Eric.
This is a good discussion because the state, for a long time, at least 10 years, only ending in the early 2000s, had spent a lot of time investing and planning in something called the Urban Ring, which was supposed to be just that, a radial transit line. More or less than where the old Inner Belt would have been if it was ever built back in the 50s. And the idea really more or less ground to a halt, mostly because of funding and maybe to some degree political issues. But there's a lot of investment cutting through core urban built out, especially historic type communities that we have. To do it the right way meant billions of dollars going far underground, everything, and nobody had the appetite for that. At some point in time, I suspect we're going to have a greater appetite for that to be able to do greater mobility, just as he mentions in terms of the European style. Many cities talk about the rainbow line connecting all the colors of their transit routes out on the beltway, such as 128/95. But again, it's a matter of when are we ready to make that public policy decision? And right now, we love the car. We're Americans.
I know. Well, we don't really have a rail line. I mean, this train system is a joke. It's like I was comparing it to the New Haven or the LIRR. It's not even in the same – I mean, those trains, you're passing each other, 1,000 at a time on going this way, that way, they're in use constantly. You know, it's every couple minutes, another train. We don't have that. It's like three out of Plymouth. I don't even know how many are out of Framingham.
New York is as European as it gets in the United States.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
We have one of the oldest transit systems in the country, and we're probably not improving it enough as time goes on.
All right. We're taking your calls today. All things traffic, 877-301-8970. We've got Brad from Westminster. Go ahead, Brad.
Hi. Thanks for having me on the show today.
Okay.
So I'm just thinking about what we can do without having to invest a whole lot of money. And, you know, right now there's tons of people going through at a specific time trying to get to work. So why not use the EasyPass system to put people into 10-minute groups and give them a discount if they go through in their group, so that way it spreads it out over like an hour and a half.
Yeah, all these things are good ideas. They could do that, and we were saying they could charge peaks, you know, for certain hours. But yeah, all that kind of stuff is totally doable.
There's actually been a lot of research, Brad, years ago, intelligent transportation systems, and they would actually platoon vehicles. So you'd be riding literally on the bumper of the car in front of you, and that would give you some level of discount. You'd act almost like a bus heading down the highway, going through the easy pass at the same time. It's a good idea.
I know there's people at Harvard doing research on analyzing that the whole traffic system, so I'm sure we have the people, we have the capabilities. We just have to do something, I think.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Fred.
Thank you.
I mean, there are kinds of things in the works. I mean, there's these they're talking about, you know, changing the whole toll system. Mm-hmm. I had James Aloisi, the former transportation secretary, on last week, and making it so everybody has some kind of a transponder, and then the tolls disappear, and you charge just a daily use fee.
Right. London's had that in place for a number of years, and it's been quite successful. A couple other European cities have got versions of that. There's no question that the technology revolution might be able to make this a lot more cost-effective. Being able to put in massive toll booths with people collecting that technology on every roadway, or those payments on every roadway, is absolutely a lot of investment, whereas just having some form of a transponder to do that has been exactly what London needed to help alleviate congestion in its core. The problem, of course, again, is still related to public policy. You know, are folks ready to do that? In Massachusetts, we're not even really ready to do what they've done in other states, which is to read license plates if you run through a red light to get a red light running ticket. Mm-hmm. So we're a little bit a ways away from,
I don't want that one.
Yeah, nobody wants that one.
All right, Danny from Cambridge. Go ahead, Danny. I think I have an idea what you're going to say here.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I'm just amazed that the word bicycle doesn't come into this conversation at all. You mentioned London and other European cities, but you know, if you've ever been, for example, to Munich, you'll see that people of every age and walk of life are biking in suits and in blue jeans. I think that you're talking about technological change. Any change that relates to cars and traffic, you tend to think that it's going to be related to moving cars and traffic
around.
It's not
a daily solution for a lot of people. I mean, you know, there's no place to put the bike, and there's weather considerations. Women have clothing issues. If there's not a place to change or shower, there are a lot more people who are commuting. We're going to do a big series coming this spring, by the way, Danny, all about biking, all through the commuter areas. So
I'm glad you brought that up, because you know what I was going to say is that you talk about technological change, but there's no discussion about cultural change. Mm-hmm. And it is true that there may be 30 days a year when biking is unsafe, but I don't think 30 days should determine what we do 330 days. Mm-hmm. And if we can make cultural change and make that more acceptable, have places for people to change and shower, it's a big thing. I'm not saying that kind of cultural change is nothing, but I think it's remarkable how infrequently it gets discussed and how ready we are to talk about messing around with small solutions.
I think Danny brings up a great point.
Yeah.
Cultural change.
Cultural, yeah.
The biking capital of the globe, many people would argue, is the Netherlands. They only started doing that in the last few decades. They weren't always bikers like that. And D.C., the worst congested city on this list, has just gone through a biking revolution.
They have fantastic bike paths.
They've
completely
changed that in just a few
years.
They
were good anyway, and now they're even more fantastic.
And Boston has its own bike share. The levels of biking
but
in places like Cambridge have skyrocketed.
Those
so we'll get
painted
there.
Lines for the bikes, that's a joke.
Yeah. There's
in the middle of Huntington Avenue, right. there's a bike lane? No.
I'm hoping for the day the community path that runs near my house in Davis Square that gets extended into downtown, because I'll get into downtown faster on a bike than I would by any other means.
Taking your calls, 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. All things traffic, and we've got Don from Arlington. Go ahead, Don.
Hi. I'd like to see some more pedestrian bridges and overpasses at those intersections where a heavy percentage of the traffic light is given over to pedestrians.
Well, like where? Give me an example. Where?
In front of Alewife Station is one. The intersection of Alewife Brook Parkway and Mass Ave.
Mm-hmm.
Anywhere along Mass Ave in Cambridge, where when the signal is for pedestrian crossing, no cars are getting through. If there were a pedestrian bridge, then there would always be cars.
That's a good point. Boylston Street is a good point, yeah.
And Don points to this big trade-off, too, which is, you know, how much you want to invest in one type of infrastructure or another. Many cities have started to try to put more time in the signal for the pedestrians to get across.
Yeah.
Cambridge has tried that in many places. It's more difficult in Mass Ave because there's so many cars. And
they should
just
do what
the
people
them.
In Boston do. They don't pay any attention to the lights
and just
whatsoever.
Run across the street, exactly.
The people just walk, even early in the morning, late at night. All the time.
And that's the reality of a lot of pedestrian bridges, unfortunately. People will just cross the road where you've seen them put in because it's too inconvenient to go up and down and
I was at Newbury and Mass Ave this morning, and if you go straight, you get onto the Mass Pike. So people really gun it. And this woman just stepped right off the curb, just waved
Didn't
at both
care.
Of us. You know, one was a big truck and then me, and then just walked right into traffic. All right, we're going to take one more call here. I've got Dawn from Newton. Go ahead, Dawn. Oh, is she there? No. All right, how about
– yeah.
Oh, yeah, there you are. Hi. Hey, Dawn.
Yeah, thanks for letting me speak. I've been actually waiting for this question for a number of years.
Oh, good.
And so it's great to have my public forum. I worked for a couple of years at the Harvard Medical School, and I'm glad somebody just touched on the pedestrian thing. But I'm from a West Coast city, and not L.A., but traffic laws were for pedestrians and drivers, and the police enforced the law. And down at the Longwood Medical Center, I sat through a light one day after leaving work. I sat through a light change 7 times.
Oh, yeah.
Before I was able to go because of gridlock and because of the people going the opposite direction, not stopping when the light turned red. And it's such a mess. If they just had somebody down there enforcing the law.
I can think of a couple other places we need that, but that's a good point. That drives me crazy. People pull into the intersection knowing the light is going to change, and suddenly you are the one,
You know, the biggest motivation for us to break the laws is usually that we're getting a little frustrated. As soon as we have to delay a little bit too long, when you see a system work right, everybody waits and crosses the intersection at the right time. But when you dedicate a little bit too much time and resource to one mode or the other, that's when the battles come.
All right. We've been talking all things traffic here with Jason Schreiber. He's a principal at Nelson Nygaard. Jason, you didn't drive over here, though.
I shared
my car.
You got
to share a car share. All right.
Thanks,
I'm going to
Emily.
Be driving home because there's no way to get public transportation out here either. All right. Thanks so much. That was a fun segment. And one of those things that really drives people crazy, traffic. And I see Callie Crossley is back. What do you got?
Well, we're not talking about a traffic rush. We're talking about a green rush in Massachusetts. And that would be green as in business, as in medical marijuana. More on that. I'm Callie Crossley.
Sounds good. And I'm Emily Rooney. This is Boston Public Radio.